to the Represent Rural podcast by Rural Community Alliance. And today we're taking a break from our season of talking with individuals who are running for public office in rural areas to our good friend at the Extension Office, Kristen Higgins, to explain or discuss and talk about some of the or all of the ballot issues that are up and that we all will see, you know, once we get our ballots for this November 2022 election. So, Kristen, I'll let you, you know, introduce yourself again. I know you're not a stranger to this podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me participate today. Kristen Higgins, and I work for the Arkansas Cooperative Extension Service, which is known as the long title, University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture, in our Public Policy Center in the Community Professional and Economic Development Unit. And I say all that because most people are familiar with us. They think agriculture right off the bat because it's in our division name, but we do a lot of community development work, a lot of education and outreach about policy issues that don't necessarily have anything to do with agriculture. And I always like to remind people that's why we're involved with ballot issue education. We've got, you know, a statewide program where we have materials in every county in Arkansas talking about what's on the ballot this year as far as constitutional amendments or state laws.
Yes, always a great resource for RCA and for us to, you know, share that information with our membership as well. So before we get started with talking about the ballot issues, I'd like for you to just go over a few of the laws that passed in 2021 that are specific to voting and things that have to do around voting that will impact voters in our state leading up to this election. I think there are a few laws that
There are a couple laws that people are paying attention to, trying to figure out, you know, what the impact is going to be when we go vote, that were implemented after the 2020 election. And some of them, in the four that I'm going to mention, are all being challenged in court. There's, it went through circuit court or that first level of court, and then it was appealed, and now it's under discussion by the Arkansas Supreme Court. But a couple of different legislators sponsored these bills. One of them requires people to stay at least 100 feet away from a polling place unless you are specifically there to vote or you have very specific business there. That's one that people are paying attention to, because in other states we saw, you know, people standing in line for very long hours and groups coming up, you know, handing out water or talking to them about different issues. And our legislature passed a law pretty much to stop that kind of interaction with voters in long lines or assistance to voters in long lines. And so that one's being challenged right now. That's Act 728. There's another one that moved up the deadline to turn in your absentee ballot. Before it was, the Monday before the election, you could walk in your absentee ballot and turn it in. And now there is a deadline of having it turned in by the Friday before. So that one's people are paying attention to because, you know, absentee ballots. One thing people don't really understand about absentee ballots is you can mail your absentee ballot, but you can also walk in to the county clerk's office and hand it over to them. So it's not just mailing in. You can, you know, if you know you're going to be out of town, you can apply for it, get that absentee ballot, vote it, and then, you know, go drop it off in person as well as mail it in. So that's a deadline that people are paying attention to. Another one, Act 736, requires absentee ballot voter signatures to be compared to signatures on their voter registration form. That one's been in the news a lot. People have been paying attention to it, saying, well, you know, for some reason or another, maybe my signatures won't match. Mm-hmm. What will that do? How will that affect me? Will my ballot be removed or tossed or challenged because my signature isn't the same as when I registered to vote many years before? or maybe somebody might have a disability that affects their signatures now, and they didn't have that before. So that's been in the news. And then there's one where voters have to submit their a copy of their ID with ballots by a certain time after the election. And y'all might remember that we did have a constitutional amendment on the ballot a couple years ago that voters approved, requiring voters to show identification when they vote, whether in person or through absentee ballot. And so if you're submitting an absentee ballot, you have to include a copy of your photo ID. So even though that's in the Constitution, it was approved by voters a couple of years ago, there's now been a change of, okay, well, before I could sign an affidavit saying I am who I am, but they got rid of that process. And now, you know, there's debate over whether, you know, people want that to still be the case. So all of those are in court, and I'm not sure when the Supreme Court is going to rule on them.
So those are four of the more than 25 that passed during the 2021 session, and all of them are in court right now.
I mean, there's more, you know, as far as the ballot issues themselves, there were laws passed regarding the process for signature gatherers. So for example, if you are a paid signature gatherer, you know, you're working for a campaign for someone wanting to put something on the ballot to vote. If you're a paid canvasser before, you were paid by signature. And now that there was a law passed that prohibits being paid by signature. So groups had to kind of work out a different way to pay people. So yeah, there were a lot of different changes at different levels, you know, maybe some that people hadn't heard of or aren't paying attention to, but there were quite a number of changes.
So with the provisional ballots and the signatures, they do have so many, is it days to come to the county clerk's office to correct the issue or to verify that they are who they said they are when they vote?
Right. So if you show up to vote and you don't have identification, you can still vote on a provisional ballot that they set aside from the other ballots. And if you don't want, you know, go to the election officials, I believe it's by noon the following Monday, then your vote will not be counted. And there was, like I said before, you could just sign that affidavit swearing to your identity, and that was removed, that ability to do that. So yeah, you have to go now to the election officials and show your ID.
Thank you, Kristen. So is there anything else you want to add before we get into the actual ballot issues around absentee ballots, or I think you just covered everything, especially around the timeline now that they have.
Well, voting, early voting starts October 24th, and the deadline to register to vote, if you're not already registered, or if you've moved or done something else that, you know, you need to update your voter registration, October 10th is the deadline to register to vote if you're a new voter. So I just want people to be aware of those dates. And then finally, if you have any questions, you know, you're wondering, you have a special situation, you need some advice, call your county clerk's office. They have election workers there, or maybe even the clerk themselves, if it's a very small county, who you can talk to and ask these questions and be like, well, what do I need to bring? There might be information on websites. For example, I know, you know, you might not live in Washington County up in, you know, where Fayetteville is, but their election division has an amazing website that could answer the questions that you might have in your county. So take, you know, call someone, call the clerk, or go look at that information on the Washington County election site if you have questions about maybe special situations.
My hope is that we all get to, well, all of our counties get to a place where we have those kind of resources, where we have websites where people could go to and easily access some of this information that they need. So let's get into the ballot issues.
Yeah, let's do it.
Issue one.
Okay, yeah. So issue one, this is a proposed constitutional amendment from the legislature that is asking voters to allow lawmakers to call themselves into a special session. Right now, only the governor in Arkansas has the ability to request legislators convene in the Capitol, and he hands them the agenda saying, this is what we're going to talk about. Special sessions, even though they're called special sessions, they happen all the time. They're not that special. They happen, like 2, 3 times during an election period, the general sessions term. So there's at least one or two every year, and the governor's in charge of it. So lawmakers are asking voters for the same ability for them to be able to decide that there's an issue that they want to address. And if this were to pass, the leaders of the House and Senate, the Speaker and the Senate President, they could call a special session and say, here's the agenda. Or a certain number of lawmakers could get together and petition to have a special session and say, here's the agenda. So that's pretty straightforward what issue one would do.
Would that petition require a simple majority from the legislators, or like
No,
how?
it's a higher percentage. I believe it is, let me think about it. I think it is 2/3 of the legislature. So it's kind of a higher threshold. It's not just, like willy-nilly, like, okay, well, we're just going to come in. So it would require signatures from 67 of the representatives and 24 of the 35 state senators. So it's a higher threshold.
Do you know of other states that do that?
So Arkansas is one of a handful of states where it's just the governor that does it.
Well, I
So
want to know
in the remaining,
the
say that again.
legislator. It the let like the legislator, they're able to call themselves in. Is that, well, there are more states that do that than not?
Yes. So we're one of 14 states where it's just the governor who has that authority. So and then the remaining states, it's a combination of the governor and the legislature that can call that special session. Yeah. So it's not terribly unique, but there's historical reasons why some states do it one way or the other.
So of the majority that don't just rely upon the governor, how many are solely the like what this issue one would be, just the legislator doing it? How many do you?
Well, so what would happen is it would be the governor and the legislature,
Okay, it would be joint.
right? So they don't replace the governor, but they would have the same authority as the governor. Yeah. So no, I'm not aware of any state where it's only the legislature. It's those 36 states. It's the governor and the legislature have that same authority to call a special session.
So issue one essentially would take it out of the sole hands of the governor and put it upon the governor and the legislator.
Right, they have the equal authority to call a special session. And so supporters of that are saying, there are sometimes issues that the legislature would like to take up that the governor doesn't want to, and that they want to have that ability, that flexibility, and have that equal power, equal branch to the governor. And then we have opponents saying, well, if it's that important and you can't convince the governor, then maybe it's not that important and it can wait to the next legislative session. Because, our legislature meets every year. Some years they're considering bills or laws, and then the other year they're considering the budget. So they're saying, well, if it's that important, then you should be able to get the governor to sign on. And if it's not, if the governor's not willing to do it, then maybe you can wait. And then also they say that actually would throw off the balance of the branches because they can already overrule the governor when he vetoes something. They can easily override that veto.
And just to, and I know I feel like you referenced this on a previous episode that we recorded, but the I know it's still a question of how do these ballot issues happen? how does the legislator have this many? How are the citizen-led ballot initiatives, like the process, or like how does this come about?
Our legislature has the constitutional authority to refer 3 proposed constitutional amendments to voters to decide. So these amendments are, you know, we've got our state constitution, it goes back to 1874, that's when it was passed. And the only way to change that constitution is through a constitutional amendment approved by the voters. So the constitution has given them the ability to put before us 3 proposals every other year when we have our big election. So that's one way we see things on the ballot. And then Arkansas is one of 14, or I'm sorry, a total of 15 states. We're one of 15 where citizens also have the constitutional right to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot, a state law on the ballot, or a veto referendum on the ballot, like right after a legislative session ends. So we're one of 15 where citizens have that constitutional right in addition to the legislature. But the citizen initiative process is a little bit more difficult. It involves, you know, collecting a certain number of signatures from voters in certain number of counties on a certain size piece of paper that has to be notarized. And we already talked about it, but if you're paying canvassers, they have to go through background checks. They have to, say, this is where I'm living. One of the changes in the law passed this last year about the canvassers is before they could come from anywhere. Now they have to be Arkansas citizens who can do that. So there's a whole litany of really minutia rules that they have to meet. And then they, once they get those signatures, they take it to the Secretary of State's office, who has employees go over all of the signatures to verify that they have the required amount. And then newer to the process is the State Board of Election Commissioners have to certify or not certify, they can decline, whether the title that we see on the ballot, whether it's free from misleading of voters, you know, whether it makes sense, whether voters can follow along and understand it. So it's a very long process, but we are unique in that we're the only state in the southeastern part of the country that has this ability for citizens.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. Arkansas. The Board of Election Commissioners. So that's a law that passed in 21, or was it before?
That was a law passed in 20. It was either 2019 or 2020. So 2020 was the first election cycle that we saw their involvement, and because it's so new, we really don't know the impact. And so that's why one of the issues that we'll talk about today, issue 4, is at the Supreme Court right now, because there's disagreement between the Board of Election Commissioners and the sponsors over whether or not the ballot title for the recreational marijuana issue, if it's misleading or not. Yeah. And they're really trying to find out what authority does the Board of Election Commissioners, if they choose not to certify, what effect does that have? Like, do they have, a really important role, or is it advisory? So we don't know, because it's a brand new process.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. There's a lot behind what we see on the ballot on election day.
So that, I feel like that perfectly leads into the next issue, issue 2.
Yeah, so issue 2 does involve constitutional amendments, so the things that people will be voting on the ballot. So this proposal is asking voters to approve a change in the required percentage of votes that a future constitutional amendment or citizen initiated state law would need to go into effect. So right now on election day, we're all used to it when we look at the results. Okay, well, who won? Well, the person who got more votes won, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing goes with ballot issues. So if a ballot issue gets a majority of a vote, then that ballot issue passes. Issue two is proposing to say that it needs 60% voter approval to pass. So instead of 50%, it would be 60%. And so what that means is if, let's say, you know, we've gotten the minimum wage a couple years ago, that passed. We had casinos pass a couple years ago, but they passed with about 52 or 53, 54% of the vote in favor. Under this proposal, they would not have passed because they would need to reach that 60% voter approval mark.
Wow. Okay, so those who are for this issue two passing, what is their argument? What is their stance?
Supporters say that the state constitution is too easy to change, that companies can come in here, or, you know, groups, citizen groups or national groups can come in with a lot of money and convince voters to change the constitution, and they think it's too easy. They point to the casino issue a couple of years ago where that proposal included very specific companies. So they're saying, oh, now we have companies written into our constitution. The state constitution I mentioned earlier is from 1874, and we have 102 amendments. Because that, again, is the only way you can update it. Mm-hmm. And so they think it's just been too easy for out-of-state interests to come in and run a campaign here. Opponents say that this increase in the threshold of votes would essentially make it minority rule. You would only need a minority of voters to object to something, and that their that minority rule would overtake the support of the majority. So instead of the majority voting for it, you know, it's now in the minority hand. And then also they say that the citizen initiative process is important, that it's a fundamental right for our Kansans to have access to the ballot, that it's already hard enough to get citizen initiatives on the ballot, that this would not really affect the outcome of the legislative issues because the legislature has an easier time putting things on the ballot. Mm-hmm. So the threshold, that 60%, would apply to constitutional amendments from the legislature as well as from citizen groups, but they're saying that the citizen groups would be harmed more by it, and that it would make it much harder to pass future ideas that might be seen to be progressive, such as, you know, increasing the minimum wage, marijuana issues. A couple years ago, there was an ethics reform bill that passed. So our voter guide has actually a list of ballot issues from 2020 to 20. I'm sorry. I'm still not used to saying 2020 as if it's in the past.
Yeah.
So from 2000 to 2020, we have a list of the ballot measures that voters approved, but that received less than 60% vote. So if you're interested in that, go check out our list, and you can see there's 12 of them that would not have been in effect had this law been in place. And so
I should have linked it for sure.
We put that in there because we actually got asked that quite a number of times when we were talking about the issue. Well, what you know, if this had been in effect, what wouldn't have been passed? And so we've got that for people to see.
Were y'all asked to come testify during the session when this was
no and I mean, we really don't take that role of
You can't, my bad.
I mean, there are, you know, academics out there who go and testify, but our role is more so here is what has happened and here's what it means. So we put together this voter guide because these issues have happened, right? They've been proposed, they were voted on through the legislature, they're out there for voters to make a decision versus us advising the legislature. We don't do that.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good note for me to take. Okay. Yeah. So for this would be saying, yes, we need 60% of voters to approve any constitutional amendment.
Right.
No would be.
And state law that citizens propose, because they can do amendments or state laws.
Amendments and state laws. And no is to keep it as it is at the 50% of the voters having to approve the amendments and state laws.
Correct. Yes. So another way to phrase it is, you want to keep this super, you know, the majority vote, or do you want a super majority vote? That's what they call it when there's a higher threshold. So, like, for example, Colorado right now is a 55% voter approval, and then Florida requires 60% voter approval. That's what this is kind of modeled after. And then they require 66% for anything related to taxes. So they call that a super majority vote.
So they have tiers in Florida.
Yes, there are other states that also have, I wouldn't say tiers, but like if it's a very specific issue. Okay. So like there's a state where if you want to change anything to do with the constitutional amendment process, then you're going to need a much higher threshold vote. Yeah. So might be very specific topics.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right, on to issue three.
All right, so issue three, the short title is the Arkansas Religious Freedom Amendment. And this issue is kind of a philosophical one. And I say that because it's not a proposal that says, you know, this will happen, this will happen, this will happen. It doesn't give you a lot of details like the other ones do. And so this proposes to prohibit government from infringing on people's ability to express or follow their religion or religious issues. So I'll read you the popular name, or I'm sorry, the ballot title name, because that's pretty short. So it's an amendment to create the Arkansas Religious Freedom Amendment, and to provide that the government may never burden a person's freedom of religion, except in the rare circumstance that the government demonstrates the application of the burden to the person is in furtherance of a compelling government interest and is in the least restrictive means of furthering that compelling government interest. And I read that to you because all of those words have a legal meaning. And I don't want to, you know, leave out the legal meaning of those words. So what this issue would do is it would say state government and local government could not burden religious freedom. And there's a whole lot of background and context to this issue at the national level, as well as at the state level. The biggest thing here to know is that what happens from this issue, if passed, would likely be fleshed out in the courts. This gives people the ability to file a lawsuit against their county, city, or state if they feel that their religious freedoms are being burdened by their local government, state government, county government. One of the things that came up when this issue was being discussed is, well, we have a state law that pretty much says the same thing. So why do we need it in the state constitution? And there were a couple of reasons. And one, you know, is the definition. It says burden. In our state law, it says substantially burden. Okay. And, you know, like when we're, if we're talking about this, like every other day, just chatting with people, we probably wouldn't think there's a big difference, but there is a legal difference between substantially burdening and burdening, right? So what is a substantial burden? What's not a substantial burden? So that's why I say a lot of this would get fleshed out in court for them to decide case by case. Well, was that a substantial burden or was that an okay burden?
Yeah.
Yeah. So another thing that's different about this is that we have that state law, and state law can be changed at any time by the legislature. So supporters are saying, well, this would be in the Constitution and very, very difficult to change without another vote of the people. Yes. So they're saying, you know, we want this enshrined in the Constitution. Opponents are saying, well, we don't really know what this is doing. It's redundant to our state law. That they are concerned it would be used against certain minorities, that by not having an understanding of substantially burdening, then that means that the government themselves could be burdened by religion. If there's ever like a public health issue or something else comes up where they really need to act in a certain way, that they're being like essentially, you know, hamstrings or prevented from acting because they might be seen as substantially, or I'm sorry, not substantially, they could be seen as any kind of burdening to someone's religious freedom. And then there's, you know, well, what if there's two different conflicting religions and one's being burdened by the other not being burdened? And so, yeah, but supporters say, you know, that they think that this should be enshrined in the Constitution. So then like the courts can't change it. State legislators can't change it without another vote of the people.
Wow.
Yeah, it's there's a whole lot more that our voter guide goes into, because like I mentioned, there's a national level, and then a lot of this I think we saw coming. Some of it has its roots in what happened in the state right after COVID became an emergency.
Yeah.
But then a lot of it, you know, goes maybe towards some more national issues.
The difference a word makes, so taking out substantial and then making it enshrined, or it's being proposed to be
right,
so people can sue the government. Now it's just the courts would have to determine what if it's substantial or not, and how the law is currently written.
Right. Right. So I mean, then they can sue under this proposal, but it's more so in the favor of the person doing the suing than in the government saying, oh, we had a substantial, you know, issue. But it does say that they have to have compelling interest, and it's least restrictive. Again, those legal terms are not defined in this, but if you can look to like some federal tests, the courts often use to see, okay, well, was this least restrictive or not?
Okay, thank you. So the last issue, issue four, which is probably the one that people have heard the most about as of lately. Yes.
Yeah, so this issue, people actually got, you know, there, well, not just this issue, but there was another one that didn't make the ballot, but there's been a lot of like commercials about that one, and then like flyers sent to people's homes. And so after that, and that was revoking the casino issue in Pope County, that didn't end up making the ballot. But that one and this one were like the most talked about issues for the past couple of months. A lot of attention has been placed on it. So issue four is the Arkansas adult use cannabis amendment, or recreational marijuana is what a lot of people call it. And this proposal would allow for adults 21 and older to legally possess 1 ounce of marijuana. And then it would also set up a system to create businesses legally that could grow marijuana and sell marijuana. And you might remember we have a medical marijuana amendment in Arkansas passed a couple of years ago. And that ties into this one, because this proposal says that the companies that currently grow marijuana for medical sales would be allowed automatically to sell marijuana for non-medical reasons, or to grow marijuana for non-medical reasons. And so that system would still be in place. You could go buy medical marijuana, and you can go buy recreational marijuana under this proposal. This proposal would also allow, it would create a licensing system for 40 additional dispensaries and 12 additional growing facilities. So we've got the people who are licensed now who could grow and sell, and then the dispensaries licensed under this could sell only recreational marijuana. They wouldn't be able to do both. And then the growers would only be able to grow for recreational sales. They couldn't grow for medical marijuana. And then the growers, the new ones, would have a certain amount of plants that they could grow, about 250 plants at one time, which is a small number. It's kind of seen as maybe like more of like a craft or a niche grower, kind of like a craft brewery. So they would be smaller growing facilities. So it affects taxes on marijuana as well. So right now, if you're you have a medical marijuana card, you go buy medical marijuana, you pay a sales tax. The dispensary, if they go, you know, to the grower and buy that wholesale marijuana, they pay a sales tax. So this issue would eliminate that sales tax completely on both the dispensary side as well as the consumer side. What it would do, though, is allow for the recreational marijuana purchases to be taxed. So a consumer would pay city, county, and state sales tax. And then in addition to that, the state could charge an additional 10% sales tax. So you could, you know, end up paying 16 to 20% sales tax, depending on where you're at in the state, when you go buy recreational marijuana. So it would change some of the taxing. And because it would change that, anybody who was getting the funds from the medical marijuana taxes would no longer get those taxes. But it would set up, you know, well, here's where the state sales tax would go. And that would go to the state general fund. It would go to a pool of money that would be given out to law enforcement every year, like an annual stipend. And then it would also go to UAMS and to drug court programs. And so that's who would receive the state supplemental, that extra sales tax on recreational sales. And I'm trying to think of what else it does. There's a lot of very small things that only affect the grower or only affect the dispensary. But from the consumer side, it would open up more locations to buy, legally buy recreational marijuana. It would not increase the number of medical marijuana locations.
Okay. It does quite a bit, or it proposes to do quite a bit, with undoing or taking away the taxes that the dispensaries and the consumers have to currently pay, removing those, and then putting I guess like taxing it like a regular, you know, something you'll buy at the store, and then an added 10% from the state.
Exactly. There are a couple of other things that it would do, affecting the advertising. It would take out like very specific what dispensaries can do in the constitution in the medical marijuana law, and it would replace it with like a more generic that the alcohol beverage control division would come up with regulations that regulate advertising, and that, you know, advertising can't be aimed toward kids. So it replaces some very specific language with some more generic language that would then be overseen by that division. One of the reasons why this is in court is it would remove a cap on the amount of THC that is in edibles for medical marijuana. There's no cap listed in the proposal for recreational marijuana, but there is an existing cap for medical. And so it would take away that 10 milligram THC cap for edibles. And the Board of Election Commissioners said, well, your ballot title doesn't mention that you're eliminating this cap, and that might really sway a voter. You know, some people might be really concerned about the amount of THC in edibles, whether it's a drink product or a food product. And so that was one of the reasons why they declined to certify the ballot title. The sponsor said, well, the ballot title said it would affect this specific section, you know, like section A1, you know, like the numerical title of the law. And it said that, but we can't get into all of the details, because then the ballot title becomes longer than the law itself if we say every single thing that's being changed in the ballot title. And so there's disagreement on that. And then sponsors say, well, the Alcohol Beverage Control Division could set rules and regulations for THC. So like there's still some oversight of that. But that is the reason why it's in court. I don't like to say it's being challenged in court, because it's not being specifically challenged. It's the sponsors didn't get the result that they wanted, and so they appealed. They brought it to the Supreme Court. And during their session with the Supreme Court, all these opponents are coming out of the woodworks to file briefs to say, we agree with the state, it shouldn't be certified, and here's why we think that. So we'll see. Early voting starts October 24th, and hopefully they'll rule by then, make a decision. There's been a lot of people come out against it. There's been a lot of people come out for it. We've got examples of what supporters are saying and what opponents are saying in our voter guide. That's in a printed copy as well as on our website, that people can read that and kind of just go over all the little changes that are in there and kind of figure out, you know, overall, are they comfortable with a constitutional amendment that allows adults 21 and older to buy and possess marijuana for non-medical reasons.
So it's being appealed now. What is the deadline for this, that appealing to be complete, for it to appear or not to appear on the ballot?
There's not really a deadline. There's no deadline in state law. So right now it is on the ballot. The Supreme Court said they wouldn't have enough time to make an opinion before August 25th. So the Secretary of State has to send the ballot out to all of the counties so that they can program their voting machines. And the Supreme Court said, well, we're just not going to get it done by then. There's no realistic way. So it's on the ballot. The question is whether votes cast for it or against it will be counted on Election Day. They're not under any sort of deadline. The Supreme Court could never rule. I mean, that's not, that doesn't do anything for us. That's not, you know, feasible. But there's not a deadline for them to make a decision. But just common sense is that they would decide by early voting, which is October 24th. But again, so people can go to our website. We'll have information updated. So if it's removed from the ballot, we'll have alerts out there on our Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram, as well as on our website saying this issue has been taken off the ballot. But even then, you know, if it's been taken off the ballot, some ballots have already been programmed, so you might still see it. So I would just advise people to go on Election Day to vote on this issue as they would vote, and then they'll find out whether it gets counted or not overall, statewide. Like, you know, in the past, we've had issues removed from the ballot at the last minute, even though people voted, and they still don't, they don't release that. They don't say, oh, here's how many people voted for it or against it. They just ignore it like it wasn't even on the ballot.
Wow.
Yeah. So do your research, make up your mind, go and vote as if it's on the ballot. And then we statewide will find out whether or not votes are cast or counted for it.
Well, thank you so much, Kristen. I can't say enough how much of a resource you all are to give the facts, the for it, against, the facts of each issue, laws and everything like that, without being biased. So that is really a jewel to have, especially these days. So again, I'll link some of the things you mentioned in this episode, but is there anything else you want to add before we leave?
Yeah, so I don't think I mentioned what supporters and opponents were thinking about the marijuana issue. So just real quick, you know, supporters say, hey, surrounding states are getting into this, and we want our tax dollars to stay here in Arkansas where they can make a difference in those programs I mentioned that would receive the tax funds. And then, you know, opponents are saying, well, hello, this is marijuana. We don't necessarily want drug use. Or they're saying, not this proposal, that there could be a better proposal in the future. So that's just a summary of what supporters and opponents are saying about this issue. But just know, on, you know, Election Day, you've got 10 minutes in the ballot booth to make your vote. I've not really ever heard of anyone saying, hey, your time is up. But that's one of the reasons why we try to give this information ahead of time, so people have the ability to sit down and go over everything and try to figure it out. And our voter guide includes a worksheet that you can make notes on and say, this is how I wanted to vote on this. And then you can tear it out and bring it with you, just in case you might not remember.
Thank you again, Kristen.
You're welcome.
Is there anything else you want to add before? I know you gave us, you might want to reiterate the deadlines for the absentee, the early vote, and things like that, just to wrap us up.
Yeah, so again, October 10th is the deadline to register to vote. Contact your county clerk's office for absentee ballot application, because you actually have to apply to get that absentee ballot if you're interested. And then early voting starts October 24th, and election day is November 8th.
All right. Thank you so much. I'll be contacting you again probably after election season to kind of wrap it up, especially with issue 4 still not knowing what's going on with that just yet. So I'll definitely be in contact with you. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, just keep checking back. You know, we'll send that out if whenever there's a decision. We will be, as will, you know, the rest of the news media will be getting that out there. But yeah, so anytime, feel free, give me a call, and please share. Yeah. And we'll have videos on our website in the next month, within the next 30 days, just a quick summary of each issue if you need like separate individual videos to share with anybody.
Okay, I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care. All right, bye.
Thank you for joining us again for another episode of the Representing Rural Podcast by Rural Community Alliance. Special thank you again to Kristen for always coming through when we need her to give her expertise of elections and ballot issues. I just really want to say thank you again. We are 39 days, I believe. We are 49. Today is Monday, September the 19th, and we are officially 49 days away from the November 8th election, the midterm election, as is also known as. We are 49 days away. This week also represents High School Voter Registration Week, National High School Voter Registration Week. So if you work at a school, or you have children who are of age, or you know someone who is 18 or over 18 and they're not registered, now is the time, especially in our high school setting. So if you are a class sponsor or a club sponsor, try to, if you can, host a voter registration drive on your campus this week so we can get our 18-year-olds registered to vote, and also get them to a point where they feel comfortable going in there, and or if they do absentee ballot, or if they early vote, or if they wait till election day, that they feel comfortable with going in and voting on things like the ballot issues and the local candidates, their statewide candidates, their federal candidates. We just want to make sure that they're registered and that they also take that next step, which is the important step of actually voting. That is the only rule power move that I have for today, is that in some kind of way, make sure during National High School Voter Registration Week, that if you have any local teens, local 18-year-olds in your community, you work at a school or anything, that you ask them, hey, are you registered to vote? If they're not, make sure that you, if nothing else, get them registered to vote this week so they are ready for the November election. Thank you all for joining us this week. You all take care.